Yo, check it out. It's me, Jordan slash Jackal 27. No Addison today, just me. Well, for now, you can hear Addison later. If you're tuning into this and you're like, man, today I really just need to listen to a regular old episode of Pocketoid, well, you're out of luck, buddy, because this is an interview episode of Pocketoid. Addison wants me to release these three interviews that he did at PAX East. With some different developers, with some different handheld games that are coming out. One of the interviews is with Square Enix for Hitman Go. One of them is with Yacht Club Games for Shovel Knight. And one of them is with Trevor Stricker of, I can't remember their company's name, for Jungle Rumble. Oh, man. And we interviewed Trevor a while ago, so you'll probably recognize him. But what was I going to say? Oh, yes. Yeah, it's not a regular episode of Pocketoid. It's just three interviews from PAX East. This should be pretty short, I think. And I'm not going to do a ton of editing on these either because I've already edited two episodes today, and that took me like 8 hours. So let's just put these out there, then you guys can do with it what you will. Anyway, we love you guys. Hope that you're having a good day. Thanks for listening to the old Pocketoads, and we'd all see you after the interviews are over. Bye.
I guess I'm just gonna give you a quick tour of what the game is about.
Okay.
So as you might have seen before, this is Hitman Go, which is a pretty different take on the existing Hitman games or the Hitman franchise. It's the first mobile Hitman game, and what you'll see right from the start, from the first level on, is that the kind of the visual direction, the art direction for it is very different. It's actually a top-down game. As opposed to the third person, like stealth action games that Hitman.
It kind of looks like a board game.
Exactly. So all the levels, they're almost like these, like dioramas or scale models. They're built to look like that. And as you can see, like with these lines, it's like a board game, as you say. So what I can do is I can swipe, I can move my pawn, which is Hitman, to move along this path, right? So, and this is the first levels. It's really super easy. I got to go to this point. Finish it, but it's just there to kind of get you up to speed with how the game works in terms of input and everything. And then once you finish that, you kind of unlock to see like one level after another, put to level two. And here's the first enemy that comes into the game. It's a blue guard, which is a stationary guard, so he doesn't move. And in this case, he's not facing me, so I can just by swiping onto, by moving my pawn onto the same position where he is, I take him out. And as you would expect in a board game, I kind of place his pawn, like if you play chess and you kill enemy's pawns or whatever, then you put them next to the board, right? So this is like the nice little touches that we added to make it really feel like as if we were playing a Hitman board game. So nice and easy. I finished this level by just going to the exit point again.
So like all the beginning levels, they're just teaching you the basics and stuff.
Exactly. So there's no tutorial telling you, hey, do this or do that. But they're like, not very, like, I guess they're just establishing the rules, right? They tell you what to do and how to play the game.
I don't know about most people, the majority, but I always kind of found the Hitman games to be pretty challenging. So I'm assuming that as you go on, it gets really challenging, or is it pretty moderate?
No, exactly. I think that's something we really like about the games, and we really try to work with as well, because it gets really challenging in the end. But for people to get into it, you actually need to start simple, right? You need to start easy to learn, like as everyone says. But it's really true in this case, because first few levels are just like learning how the game works. And then, as you'll see in a moment, we'll add more mechanics, more complexity, more enemy types and everything, which is really the heart of the game, right? To kind of combine all these different elements. So since it's a turn-based game, you'll notice that if I move into line of sight of this guy, so the way it works is that all the enemies in one node ahead of them. So if I go there on his turn, he'll just take me out, right? So this teaches me that, much like in other Hitman games, I don't run into my enemies up front, right? I kind of take them out, I maneuver around them, I take them out from the side while they're not watching.
So it's very, very similar to chess, like you're saying. And I see little other pawns that are civilians. Can you interact with them, or can they make you fail your mission if you're sighted?
So the pawns that you're referring to here, they're basically what we call like ambient characters. So they're more like there to tell a story without any words, right? So you're just looking at these levels and you see something's going on, like this gardener here, or you saw the two guys trimming the hedge. So really the inspiration for this was looking at scale models. When you see the people that build these models, they add these little characters that they're often kind of like a freeze frame story, right? They're doing something or they're talking about something. And without having any dialogue or cutscenes, it immediately tells me a lot about this environment that I'm in, right? So there's people taking off. It looks like a huge place, people taking care of the garden, so probably a rich person's place. So it's a non-verbal way of telling a story, right?
Yeah, so they're just kind of like narrative context.
Exactly, yeah, without getting into the way of the actual gameplay, because it is kind of like a stealth puzzle game, as you might call it. So this is just like the first two levels, especially, they're just like nice, easy, get you used to the mechanics. But the fourth one is, for example, is the first that kind of puts you in front of a puzzle or a bit of a challenge. Still very simple, but just to kind of show what we can do with just these kind of basic mechanics that we have so far. For example, the blue guys learned that they can attack me if I move in front of them like so. So I kind of have to figure out what the path is through this garden, because I can't take him out because he's kind of covered by the other guy, same as him. But I can take out this guy. I can't go here, I can go around, and I can kind of read my way, I can kind of figure out the way I have to navigate and move through this labyrinth. And see, like, as I said, behind all the pawns, they land to the side of the board.
But I assume that as you move on, like, your enemy pawns are going to move around as well.
Exactly.
On turn.
Still fourth level, still pretty basic, but I can, since this is a dev build, I can unlock all the boxes to kind of show you what the mechanics are further down the line. For example, on level 8, not only is this the first level where you get to kill a mark, so a hit. This is the red pawns. They're basically people you need to kill. They're visually different, they're all unique, so you only kill this guy in this particular level. But apart from that, you also see that this is the first level where we have a new enemy type. So we have a lot of different enemies. This is not a stationary, he actually moves on every turn I take. On their turn, they move one ahead, right? So I can't just bypass him like this, because he will kill me if I would just walk in front of him. However, if I time it right and I just follow him right behind him, I actually have enough time, have a window of opportunity, so to speak, to take out the target I have to kill. And maybe another interesting thing on this level is that you've seen before, like, all you had to do is to finish the levels on the previous levels, but now you actually get a secondary objective. So I actually managed to do this in 14 or less turns. And the third one is I could try and get the secret briefcase, which is over here. Yeah, exactly. But actually, I have to do like a detour to get there, right? So it's a nice additional challenge that you get. And throughout all the levels, apart from the five first tutorial levels, you get these challenges depending on the level and depending on the setup that you're in. But now, for example, these are still like basic mechanics. I can show you some stuff that happens later. So for example, in the second box, which is this kind of nighttime French, almost like European inspired chateau.
Very noir.
You can, for example, here on level 11, disguise is obviously a very big feature in Hitman, right? There's a key mechanic in Hitman games. So when we try to figure out how can we put disguises in this game, right? Because it's a Hitman game. So the way it works, we already got the color coding for the enemies, right? So the blue guy is the stationary guy.
Okay.
Yellow guy is the
So getting the yellow jacket, I'm guessing the yellow enemies won't mess with you, but the blue ones still
exactly.
will?
Exactly, that's how it works. So I go in here, Hitman takes on the yellow disguise, and now I can basically move without having any problems from the yellow guys, but still I can take out the blue guy, for example, for here. But still, if I move here, the blue guy will still see me, right? So to overcome this guy here, I would need a blue disguise. And look further down the game, there's a lot of different enemy types, so there's more variety with disguises and all these kind of things. Can go here. This is the first disguise level, so it's more of an introduction. You see, I could do it without killing anyone. I killed a guy, but like back in Hitman games, traditionally, there's this kind of like silent assassin, don't kill anyone. That's something we put in as a secondary objective as well.
So you've got usually about three challenges per level. Do you have rewards in the game for completing those challenges?
Yeah, so that every challenge that you complete adds one to your total insignias, which is the Hitman logo. And this is like an unlocked build that I'm using to show you, but if you just bought the game, then these would be locked, and you would unlock them with a certain amount of insignias.
Okay, all right.
It's a nice progression to get people learning the mechanics, and then once they got like 25 or so, they can go to the second box, or they can finish off all the secondary objectives.
Right, so doing like the bare minimum might not get you the next set of levels.
It will get you probably like here or so, but then further down the line, you would need to get some more of these secondary objectives to unlock everything. Maybe some, just a few more things to show you in terms of mechanics. Obviously, the further it's harder, the more gameplay elements. There's a sniper rifle that you can use to take out enemies at the distance. Or this one's really cool. It's like the silver ballers. I don't know if you know them, the iconic hitman weapons. So they're kind of fun. If you just moved there without those guns here, both of them would kill me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But since there's this the silver balls on this node, I can take them and I can basically take out the enemies.
Oh, that's really cool.
It really gets to me, right? So it's another of these key Hitman elements that we translated into this board game.
What was that item? Is that a one-time use?
Yeah, the silver ballers and the sniper rifle, they're like a one-time use. So the challenge is sometimes there's levels where you need to line up a lot of people on the right spot and then take them out with a gunshot. And so that's then kind of the nature of the game. Again, here, like I have different objectives to do, and as you see, like there's different enemy types. For example, a guy with a riot shield, or like a squad, so he sees in two directions. He can kill you in two directions. Maybe last mechanic to show you would be something that's also in other Hitman games. It's like guard dogs, right? So they can actually see me. They're the only exception. They can see me two spots in front. And as soon as they notice me, they go like in pursuit mode. So they will follow me around the map. Like so. I have to either just keep moving, try and kill them. What's fun is that on this map is actually another mechanic that's introduced earlier in the game, but this is like the fourth box. It's kind of reusing it. Are these secret passages? So there's like hatches on the map that connect two nodes that are not necessarily connected to each other. You could even, sometimes you find them with more space between, but this is, so I can go through here. I disappear, I come up on the other side, and now the dogs, they actually don't know where I went, right? So I can use this to my advantage, and on top of that, I can come back and take them out at the same time.
I was hoping that that's what you were going to do. I was hoping that'd be...
Yeah, that has to happen, right? So again, here's like a briefcase. I can pick that up and finish the level. Level complete. I could do it without killing any dogs, right? That's one of these secondary objectives. Didn't do it. I had to kill the dogs. Had to do it.
So. Yeah. Well, they were probably not good dogs.
And that's kind of the setup for the game, right? There's more mechanics, more elements. The further you go, like for example, here's like a sniping enemy pawn and all kinds of different things. And maybe I can show you, just to finish up kind of the tour of the game, I can show you one last element, which is a special box. The fifth box is a box that we built on top of an existing level from an old Hitman game. So we took, as a reference, we took Curtains Down from Hitman Blood Money, which is like a fan favorite level, but also is really cool level. And we decided to reimagine it within Hitman Go, right? So you see it's this opera house where the level takes place in Hitman Blood Money. So we kind of rebuilt this opera house within our art style and within our kind of constraints that we have. But it's the same kind of almost narrative setup where you start in this entrance hall, you work your way down to the workshop, come back up, you go to this kind of top floor where you can see the scene below. You get to rig like the chandelier, and then at the end I can just show you one of the levels. They're actually more complicated because it's like this end game content almost. Same scene, I don't know if you've played Blood Money, but it's the same scene where you get to see a rehearsal for like an opera show. And here's like a chandelier, and with a detonator, if I get here, the chandelier will drop and it will kill my mark, right? So it's the same kind of setup, just rebuilt within Hitman Go.
Okay, well, that's really cool. Oh man, I just lost my question. So you've got, it looks like you have some control of the camera.
Yeah.
Is it just kind of a scrolling, or do you have more of a three-dimensional control of it where you can like kind of tilt it around objects?
Actually, that's how it works. The way it works is that it's kind of pivoting around. You can rotate it, so I get the 3D view on it. But as soon as I release, it goes back to the initial standpoint, which is which we did because we wanted to have the player to just focusing on gameplay, right, without having too much camera, having to do too much camera manipulation. But still, if you want to see the level, you can still look at it from different angle. And what's fun is that sometimes you'll see like scenes hidden on the second floor or in the basement or stuff like that. The little characters, a little story going on, that a little reward for like your curiosity, where you get to see what's going on.
That's really cool. That's a really interesting camera mechanic that I haven't seen done in portable games very often. And this is only an audio podcast, unfortunately. So, I mean, we'll link to it in the show post, but the game is gorgeous. It's really, it looks really good in person. The screenshots don't do it justice. It kind of reminds me of, maybe this isn't a good way to describe it, I don't know, but kind of like Hotline Miami meets Chess meets Hitman.
Okay.
I don't know.
Sounds good.
I don't know if you think that's accurate or not, but I mean,
sounds good, yeah.
Just watching it, that's kind of the vibe I get.
Cool. No, I think especially like the art direction and the visual style of the game is something really proud of. To kind of this, something really unique. We don't know, I personally don't know other games that do this kind of diorama, scale model, aesthetics. And I think it works really well with the Hitman franchise.
Yeah, I can't really think of anything similar to it. But yeah, it looks great. So it's coming out on iOS, Android.
It's going to come out on iOS first, on iPad and iPhone, 17th of April. And then on Android shortly after.
Okay. Price point?
$4.99.
Okay, yeah, that's a steal. That's a really good price.
Cool.
All right, well, that's awesome. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Cheers.
Thanks.
All right, so that was Addison interviewing, I'm not sure who that was, but it was somebody from Square Enix about their new game, Hitman Go. Like they said at the end, it's available on iOS, and it's coming to Android shortly after. But it's out right now, and it's $5, and we've been hearing really good things about that. Hopefully we're going to have a review of that really soon. But yeah, go check that out. Okay. This next interview is with Yacht Club Games about their new game, Shovel Knight, so we hope that you guys enjoy it.
You can say Waz, it's fine.
Good. Alright, I am here with Waz from Yacht Club Games. They are about to release Shovel Knight. It will probably already be released by the time you hear this, hopefully. They're not making any promises. So tell me about Shovel Knight.
Shovel Knight is a game born from the collective experiences of the team's childhood. So like we all played the NES and the SNES as we grew up, and as Shovel Knight Corner sort of grew as a way for us to make the game that we wanted to make. You know, really, it's not as much trying to jump on the 8-bit fad as just trying to make a game that really appeals to us. And with the feasibility of a small team, 8-bit kind of style game makes sense. I mean, it's not totally 8-bit. You know, we're taking some liberties with it for sure. And people who are purists will definitely see that remark on it. I mean, it's widescreen. We don't do screen flickering or scan lines or anything like that. But the game is exactly the kind of game we want to make.
Okay, sorry. I was just, like, staring at the frogs because they remind me exactly of, like, the frogs in Little Nemo for NES. And it just kind of brought me back for a second. Okay, so I was talking to Erin earlier, and she was saying that there's like some differences between the different versions. The 3DS one has like a Street Pass battle feature. Vita had like, was it a four-player multiplayer?
The Wii U, the game's not out in the Vita, it won't be coming out in the Vita yet. We would like to, but it will be on the Wii U and Steam. And those two versions will eventually get the battle mode. So one of our stretch goals, because this game was born of a Kickstarter. And one of the stretch goals was a four-player battle mode, and the last stretch goal was to have all the bosses playable in the battle mode. As an aside, we had no idea that was ever going to happen, and we just said, like, you know, pie in the sky dreams, we'll do this, and then we hit it, and it was like, oh no, now we have to do it.
Oh no, now we actually have to do the thing.
Yeah, totally. So, the 3DS won't have the battle mode because it's couch co-op, and all the multiplayer on a 3DS, even if you're just doing it on the couch with a 3DS, is still doing like online connection,
okay,
data transfer. So
okay, cool. So is there any like kind of background or like lore to go with the main character? Because he's like It's kind of, he's very interesting. He's for people who haven't seen him, he's kind of like a mix between a Viking and a knight carrying a shovel.
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, we do have an opening, kind of a Minish Cap style opening cinematic that kind of describes the basics of the world and the story and what's going on. But for the most part, the game is very simple, and there's not really a... you don't need to really get into the story. I mean, it's there, and we have the character interactions, we have personalities for each character, and we have little voices for each character, actually. Not actual voices, but when the text types out for each character, it's different, it's a different sound that each letter makes, and so they each have their own unique voices. And we love making characters feel unique and feel, memorable. But... it's the story is not a huge priority. Mainly what's important to us is the gameplay, making sure that Shovel Knight feels strong and feels like he's a solid character the player can relate to. Hold on a second. If you just started, right? If you want, we can start it over for you.
Yeah, that's good.
All right.
Totally lost what I was doing. I was zoning out listening to the music. I really, really dig the music.
Yeah, the music's great. We have Jake Kaufman, the...
Oh, I didn't know he was doing the music. Makes sense now.
Yeah, he's awesome, right? He's the best. He's doing an amazing job with the soundtrack. He's doing all kinds of tracks. It's a really robust soundtrack.
Yeah, he's a busy guy.
Yeah. He's extremely busy, always working. And actually, for the purists, his music is authentic. And actually, it's the most authentic part of the game. He works in Famitracker, and if anybody knows what that is, it's a program that allows you to make NES music that, if you have the right backend for any actual NES cart, you could burn his music to a cart and play it on your NES. It's the most authentic part of this game. But it's always really impressive. We also have Manami Matsumai. She's generously giving us two tracks of her time and effort. She's the original composer and sound designer for Mega Man 1.
Oh, that's funny that you say that, because I was totally getting Mega Man vibes from the music. So that makes sense. All right.
She's contributing a couple tracks, and we're looking forward to that. They're really good.
All right, well... this booth is crazy busy because this game is amazing, so I'm going to let you get back to it. But thank you so much for talking with us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Addison. How's it going?
I don't remember what that dude's name is, but he seemed like a really nice guy. We're really excited for Yacht Club Games' Shovel Knight, and we're also excited to hear Jake Kaufman's music. In fact, if you don't know, he does the opening song for our podcast. He didn't make it for us. We stole it from Mighty Switch Force 2, and he said we could use it. So that's cool. But other than that, we are going to move on to our final interview, which is with Trevor Stricker, about his new game, Jungle Rumble, and the changes that have happened since the last time we interviewed him. So hope you guys enjoy it. Bye.
All right, I am here at PAX East, and with me is Trevor Stricker, an old guest of the show, from Disco Pixel, and by the time you've heard this, Jungle Rumble should be released by now. So
let's hope.
Yeah.
Unless Apple bounces us.
Oh, that'd be terrible. I don't think they would do that.
I hope not.
We're gonna just assume that they haven't. has anything changed with the game since last we talked?
So, a lot has changed with the game. Basically, we've added probably three times the content since PAX Prime.
So that brings it to like a total of how many levels?
So there's two worlds, and the worlds are all, rather than have a length target, we more have how much stuff is in there target.
Yeah, you're going for a more quality over quantity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, we make this game because we love rhythm games, and we want to blow your mind with how awesome this game can be, not give you tons of busy work.
Yeah. Well, I've had a chance to play it, and like I've said in the past when we've had you on, it is great, and I can't imagine, given a year, I'm sure it's gotten even better. So I'm looking forward to playing with the final build here in just a few weeks. I'm guessing you're probably pretty stoked. You just gonna get some rest afterwards, or you're gonna immediately move on to another project?
We've got a bunch of updates planned.
Yeah.
So if you remember, there are certain stages that are optional, that if you want to get more gold medals, you can do them, or that explains the subtle parts of the strategy. So the first update is we're gonna add a bunch more of those, explaining some of the quirks in the strategy, taking players, you know, even a lot of times when people have played a lot, they don't understand why they're not getting gold medals and they think they're doing it perfectly. Well, we can explain some of the depth of the strategy so they can get better at it. The second update we want to do is a level editor.
So, as in making your own levels.
Exactly.
I don't know why I said that. Obviously, that's what it is. I don't know what else it would be.
It's because what your listeners maybe don't understand is PAX is a gauntlet of talking and playing video games, and it is awesome, it is intense, and it is draining.
My listeners also might not be aware right now that I am running on like a max of 2 hours of sleep for the last 36 hours, so that may or may not have something to do with it. Anyways.
Addison, are you one of these disgusting people who does not drink coffee?
You know, it's funny. I actually do not drink coffee, and to top it off, I work at Starbucks. So,
is that irony?
I don't know. I don't think it's actually irony by definition, but by commonplace definition, yes. Anyways, you were talking about the level editor. That's what it was, the level editor.
Yep. Right, so we already have a level editor that I use to build levels in the game. Now, it's also gross and disgusting and crashes if you do the wrong thing and you can get it into a bad state. So what we're going to do is we're going to clean it up, probably put some tutorials in there, and make it so that people can actually build their own levels in the game.
All right, that sounds awesome. I mean, you have... there's a decent amount of rhythm games out there, but are on mobile platforms, but I can't think of any that have a level editor. So that's really exciting, and I think it's a good feature to set you apart. So you've gotten some more levels in since last time. You have updates planned with level editor. Are those updates going to be free updates, or are those going to be like an in-app purchase kind of thing?
The game is a premium game. Once you buy it, you're free to play all you want.
All right.
That means all the updates are just going to come. We're a small company. We're not trying to build a business on nickel and diming people. If you play our game, if you like our game, that's awesome. We love you. We pour ourselves into this. We want you to love it as much as we do.
That's awesome. I'm sure everyone's happy to hear that. Too often you are drawn in by a game and you're like, oh, this is a great game, and then you have to, you know, purchase all the features that you really want, and it ends up, you know, just the whole freemium wear stuff doesn't always work well.
My first game was a Dreamcast launch title. That's when every game was a premium game. In fact, you had to drive to the mall and pick it up in a box, and once you owned it, you owned it.
Yes.
I don't know. To me, that's how games work.
Unless you're one of those terrible people that burned it or something. We don't talk about those people. Those aren't...
To be honest, I think gamers are getting sick of that. You know, it worked for a while. And, you know, people are used to it now, and they don't like it. And ultimately, games are entertainment.
Right.
The game industry will only survive if people love us. Nobody's going to fall in love with the game that they have to, you know, pay a dollar every time they want to... First of all, why would you pay to accelerate something that happens in the game? Right?
Yeah, I've never really understood that. It was like things like the Simpsons, whatever it was called, Tap Simpsons Tapped Out. It's like most of the freemium games where you can do things and it'll take 8 hours, or you can pay $1 and just have it done. But I mean, why would you want to do that? You're just rushing at it.
And you know, you see the big backlash against things like Dungeon Keeper. People are getting sick of it. You know, I should say I'm not opposed to microtransactions or to free-to-play games. Not only was my last indie company, Quick Hit Football, a free-to-play online football game, you know, you could look at Magic the Gathering. That was microtransactions.
Yeah, or like Soulforge is really big right now, similar to Magic. I started playing that recently, and I've been playing a ton of Dota 2 lately, and I think that is, MOBAs, I think, are a pretty good example of doing free-to-play right, where you can get microtransactions, not pay-to-win, but if you really like the game, you're spending a lot of time, throw some money in there, and you get a little bit extra and get to support people that are making a game you love.
Exactly. You know, we're hoping that people who like rhythm games, people who like indie games, people who like Jungle Rumble, find that there's enough value that they're going to essentially put down the cost of a latte to play this game.
Yes. So, anyways, kind of got sidetracked. That's my fault.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up latte.
That's okay. I do like the chai lattes. It's a little different. So, is there anything, you got the updates planned and new levels since last time. Is there anything else new that we should know about?
Sorry, so new levels, new mute, and a level editor, that's not enough?
Oh, I'm not. Oh, I'm just. Same. No, no. Of course it's enough. I'm just making sure that I'm not going to like forget anything. I'm just making sure we got it all in there.
Okay, so there is one more thing. Two more things. The first thing we want to do, depending on what the response is to our level editor, is we want to actually start publishing the levels that people make. So we might have weekly levels, or might even have daily levels, depending on the quality and the quantity of the user-generated content that we're seeing. The other thing, which is at some point in the future, is a music editor.
Oh, okay.
So Jungle Rumble has a dynamic soundtrack. We actually build the background music on the fly in response to what the player is doing. And because we have that system, all the music is basically programmed in, and we've already got an editor for that, and we want to release that so people can make their own music.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I was kind of hoping that maybe that might be a feature, but yeah, that's really cool.
Well, it will be, just not at launch.
Right, but I mean, just knowing that it's coming, that's good enough. I totally forgot what I was going to ask. I had something. What was I going to ask you? Oh, I remember now. At launch, will the game work with the Google Play games or the iOS Game Center?
Sure. We've got achievements to track your progress through the game. We don't have leaderboards yet. We probably will for some of the more challenging puzzles. It's a single-player rhythm game, so there's not going to be lobbies or matchmaking or anything like that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's still fun to, like, kind of compare scores with your friends, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think achievements are fun.
Yeah. Okay, so by now, I'm assuming the game will be out. But if by some miracle of God we get this episode out just insanely early, when is the game scheduled to launch?
The beginning of May.
Okay, cool.
And for updates, you can actually go to our Facebook page. And, you know, if you like us, you might see some of it. I know Facebook isn't great that way. Facebook.com/DiscoPixelGames. I'm sure you can put the link in there.
Yes.
Also, if you go to DiscoPixel.com, we have an email list. And we don't just spam you with news of DiscoPixel. We also send out promo codes from our friends who make indie games. We only send out email once a month, if that much. I'm very lazy about it. And that's a cool way to stay in touch with us and to see behind the scenes of how the video game sausage gets made.
Yes, except it's probably more appealing than actual sausage.
Yes.
Do you have a fixed price point decided on yet?
We are so up in the air about that.
Okay. All right. Well, I think it's all I really had for you. Thanks for being on again.
Thanks for having me, Addison. This is a really cool podcast.
Oh, thanks. We try.
Right on. Sorry, apparently somebody from Google is on my booth now, and they want to get...
Hey, guys. We hope that you enjoyed our little interview episode. If you did like it, make sure and tell Addison on Twitter, because he put a lot of hard work into it. And also, those games, once again, the first one was Hitman Go by Square Enix. The second one was Yacht Club Games Shovel Knight. And the third one was Jungle Rumble by Disco Pixel. And so, yeah, check out the information about those games. We'll have stuff in the show post. And you can buy them on your handheld devices. But other than that, we hope you guys enjoyed it. We love doing interviews like this, and we hope to have more to come in the future. We will see you guys next time. K, love you, bye.